Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. Hello, America. Good to be with you and happy Super Tuesday. That's right. The biggest primary night of the 2024 election season occurs tonight. 15 states are going to pick their choice for Republican and Democratic nominee. I think everyone expects it to be a good night for Donald Trump. He could get near the vote total he needs to clinch the nomination. He needs 1,200, a little more than 1,200 votes. He has about 240, 250 going in already now. That should ultimately grow by a large amount tonight. And then the question is, will Nikki Haley drop out tonight? That is a question a lot of people are watching very closely. Now, we got a jam-packed full, great show of politics for you today. We're not going to mess around. We're going to dive right into the most exciting primary day of the year. In a little bit, we are going to talk to one of the greatest pollsters in America, Scott Rasmussen. He gets it right. He is very careful in what he sees and what he does. It's always very exciting to have him on. And he'll give us his prognostication on a lot of things. There's a big moment that just happened in politics ahead of tonight's primary results. And that is Kyrsten Sinema, the independent from Arizona, former Democrat. She decided she's not going to run at all. She doesn't have a home in the Democratic Party anymore. She's not running for re-election. That pretty much leaves that race down to a liberal Democrat in Carrie Lake. And I think that that's going to be a really significant thing. And it's, you know, like Joe Manchin a few months ago, who stepped down in West Virginia, the independent moderate Democrat is being made extinct by the Joe Biden far left policies of the Democratic Party. It's also obviously putting the whole party in jeopardy when you look at the polling numbers, the 47% strong disapproval rating for President Biden, unlike anything I've seen in my reporting career of 30, 40 years. And so that is a big one. So Scott Rasmussen will kick us in today. That's pretty exciting. In the second block, Madison Gilbert, who used to work for me at the Washington Times Today, she's the national spokeswoman for the Republican National Committee. She'll give us her take on what Republicans are doing. Hey, right after Super Tuesday, there's an election to replace Ronna McDaniel as the RNC chairwoman. The party's going to look different. It's going to act different. It's going to be different in just a few short days. One of the many consequences of Donald Trump marching towards his third straight Republican nomination. He gets to put his own imprimatur on the Republican Party. And of course, right now, he's pushing for Michael Whatley, a guy that's on this show often, the current North Carolina GOP chairman and also the RNC's general counsel. So he's number one. And then Laura Trump is President Trump's choice to be the vice chairwoman. Those are two big names and would be a big change. It'd be a big change in the mindset, in the mentality, in the communications. And I will say one other big one, the get out the vote operations. I think that Michael Whatley has mastered this new era of get out the vote, which requires you to succeed both at getting early voters out, couch potato voters, people who are too busy to vote on election day, low propensity voters. They vote early, and then you get your base out on election day. Republicans haven't done that well in many states, but one state they've done it well, Michael Whatley's backyard, where he's the Republican Party chair, the North Carolina Republican Party, one of the best at doing it. And I think incredibly important to see if he rises to the top, because I think he'll change the mindset of the Republican Party. A lot more early voting will get into the bank more than I think ultimately had gotten in the bank before. All right. So that is what we're going to be doing today. We got a great show. In the third block, we're going to talk to the owner and founder of the great company, Muzzle Stick. As you know, I am a huge proponent of the gun safety, of course, Second Amendment. I'm a proud gun owner and a believer in the Second Amendment's absolute right. But I also believe with that right comes a responsibility to be safe. And Muzzle Stick has done more ingenious ways of bringing safety. As you know, most accidental gun shootings occur from someone who's not familiar with the gun. Having a barrel or chamber flag lets that unfamiliar person say, hey, that gun is loaded or that gun's safe. It's an extra benefit. And I think tonight you're going to hear a great interview from the founder of Muzzle Stick, including the story of how it all started. It actually started really with a stick, a twig. He had his muzzle loader out. He put a twig in it to let his son know that it was loaded. That was the birthplace of the Muzzle Stick product that now is sweeping across the country. You're going to be able to hear that firsthand account in the third block of today's show. So we got a good one today, starting off with Scott Rasmussen, Madison Gilbert, and then a great conversation about the origins of one of my favorite companies, Muzzle Stick. That's our lineup for today. Now, before we go to commercial break, a couple things. First, I want to highlight a story that I hope all of you read. It's something that I worked on with Stephen Richards over the last few weeks. Stephen, really one of our stars here at Just the News. It's very important for people to understand that the evidence now in the record, irrefutable from inside, from Biden family insiders. This is not coming from critics of the administration. It's coming from family insiders who worked in the business. Joe Biden routinely met with Hunter Biden's clients. And the pattern is shortly after Joe Biden met with those clients, big payments usually changed hands to the benefit of Hunter Biden, Jim Biden, the Biden families. As Chairman Comer said over the weekend on this show, he closed the deal, meaning Joe Biden was the closer. He closed the deal. They weren't going to invest in a cocaine-addicted first son without knowing that the father was behind him. And so he was the brand, as Devin Archer said. But as Jason Galanis and many other partners said, he's the guy that also let it be known he was behind his son. Phone calls, meetings, lunches, be good to my son admonishments. Oligarchs, Russian, Ukrainian, Kazakh, they all got the first EP treatment. And often right after getting that treatment, they sent the money over to Hunter Biden. That's how systemic this operation was. This influence peddling targeted people overseas who had a reliance on Joe Biden's foreign policy responsibilities. He was in charge of Ukraine, Russia, Kazakhstan, Eastern Europe, and China. And oh, that's just where Hunter Biden and his business partners went. Kazakhstan, Romania, Russia, Ukraine, and China. And as the deal ripened and got closer to fruition, Hunter would put his dad on the phone, and then usually the dad would meet with some of them. If it's not at Cafe Milano or at the National Naval Observatory, in a restaurant at the Four Seasons Hotel, Joe Biden was there. He showed up. He let it be known he was behind his son's business deals. I think one of the more shocking things that Jason Galanis said was that the Chinese were investing, the CEFC China deal, the Chinese were investing because they actually thought Joe Biden might eventually join the board. That's how tight Joe Biden was to this operation. Everything he told us in 19 and 20 has been debunked by records, emails, phone messages, voicemails, and the very people who worked with Hunter Biden, who now have been put under oath by the Congress and told the truth to Congress, or they certainly told their account to Congress. That's an important one. One more good one. We're going to have this I think, tomorrow's show or Thursday's show. But I just want to point this out. Those Republicans who took the House saying, we're going to cut spending. As you know, they've repeatedly failed. You heard what Scott Perry said yesterday. I don't think we're going to cut a dime out. I think we're going to go the opposite direction. Well, when you get the bill that was put out there, the first of the two spending bills out of this bipartisan deal, the Mike Johnson deal, there's something very troubling. There are 605 total pages listing earmarks. Yep, earmarks are back with a vengeance on Republicans' watch. And just absorb that. That you want to understand why we're running a deficit that accrues about $1 trillion every 130, 150 days? It's because of things like earmarks and the failure of House Republicans. They talked a big game. They've not executed a big game at all. And 605 pages of earmarks is the ultimate condemnation of that. Just keep that in mind. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Scott Rasmussen, right after these messages. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. As you know, on big election days, I like to turn to one of the most trusted voices in all of politics. He has been astute as a pollster, astute as an advisor. He understands the country and what the pulse of the nation is beating like. He is my good friend, Scott Rasmussen. He joins us right now. Scott, great to have you back on the show.
John, always good to be with you. A year ago, if you'd asked me, I'd have thought we'd be talking about a lot of different things on Super Tuesday, but it hasn't worked out that way.
I guess that's why they play the game, right? You never know how it's going to turn out. And if you told me that we're going to have a Trump-Biden rematch a year ago, I don't know about that, but it's going to be a Trump-Biden rematch. There's no doubt about it now. I think maybe the most important thing to happen on Super Tuesday has already happened before the first poll closed. And I think it is the acknowledgement by Kyrsten Sinema that she doesn't have a political home in Arizona. She's not going to run for Senate. That leaves a more left-leaning candidate to go up against Carrie Lake. There wasn't that long ago where independent Democrats still had somewhat of a home, maybe not the blue dog home. But with Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, that seems like they have become extinct in the era of Joe Biden.
Yeah, I think partly that's a factor of the Democratic Party moving so far to the left, but partly it's just a result of a broader trend. You know, if you go back a couple decades, it wasn't unusual to have a president win a state and have a senator win from the opposite party. We don't see that. As a matter of fact, Ballotpedia has done some great work showing that all the way down to the state legislative level now. You know, if your state legislative district votes for a Republican, you probably have a Republican rep. So that's been part of the story here. And I think for Sinema, in a lot of ways, her situation was similar to Senator McCain's, but McCain was a lot more established by the time he began to run into those kind of troubles.
Yeah, that's right. He had that name recognition, and people don't like to fire their home state lawmaker very often, but she didn't get there yet. She was too new to the process. Stepping back from tonight, there's not going to be a lot of drama. Donald Trump's going to roll up the majority of the delegates. He'll be maybe 100 or 200 short, 300 short, maybe. When fighting distance, Joe Biden's clearly going to be the guy. What are the undercurrents you're going to be looking for from these 15 states tonight, since the outcome is obvious? But what are some of the sentiments that you might be using, measuring that say, hey, this is where the pulse is of the nation right now?
Well, you know, I think the first thing I'm going to do when I watch the results coming in is I'm going to discount most of what I hear about what these storylines mean.
The truth is,
you know, this is not an election where there's a lot of doubt. So turnout's going to be down. There will be special races. Here in Texas, we've got some interesting state legislative races on the school choice issue and things. But But realistically, there won't be a lot of clues coming out of tonight. And what you're going to see is a lot of political people just desperate for something to talk about are going to say, oh, well, the uncommitted vote here means Biden's in trouble, or Haley's vote means Trump's in trouble. And not really true. We really need to step back and take a deep breath and say, you know, these elections, we can't compare this to 2016 or 2020 because it's not a competitive environment.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And also, at the end of the day, the bases of the party aren't going to go too far from where they are today. It's really the question of which candidate either appeals the most to the centrists, the independents, the undecideds, or which one feels like they're going to do the least harm, because this may be one of those races where people say, all right, which one's going to hurt me less? That race really starts tonight, though, right? Because with the clarity after tonight, it's all about the general election from today forward, right?
It is. You know, you and I talked right after Iowa, and we said pretty much at that point it was there. But it's taking a little while to settle in, and a lot of people have not been wanting to, especially in the political world, have not wanted to admit that was what was coming. But it is absolutely going forward right now. It is a general election campaign. You know, the polling we see right now shows that the Republican voters are a lot more enthusiastic about Donald Trump than Democratic voters are about Joe Biden. That may have a bit of a turnout issue. But I think I think one of the stories that's not been talked about enough with all the polling that's out there, you know, if you look at the national public opinion polls, right now they show either Biden and Trump in a toss-up or Trump with a slight edge, and really very slight. And we're so far away, you know, you can't get all hung up on a point or two.
History's going to change for a long time, yes.
But here's the story. In 2016, Donald Trump lost the popular vote by 3 points and won the Electoral College. In 2020, he lost the popular vote by 4.5 points and almost won the Electoral College. If this is a toss-up, if the popular vote is tied or if Trump has a slight victory, he is easily going to win the Electoral College. And that's why we see all these swing state polls coming out saying Trump's ahead. Now, I would be surprised sitting here today if he wins all 7 of those swing states, but he doesn't have to. If he does as well as he is in the polls right now come Election Day, you know, he's going to have a pretty decisive Electoral College victory, and we won't have to be talking about it for 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's right. There won't be a hanging election. It's going to be pretty clear. The number that struck me this weekend, and I think it's actually felt this way in talking to people. Every time I go out into the field, I go to a state outside of Washington, D.C., and you talk to real people, I really have gotten a sense, man, people are just really mad at Joe Biden. They just don't feel like he's got it. He's not listening to them. He's talking past them, or he doesn't have the faculties to talk to them anymore. But when the number came out in the New York Times Siena poll, which is a very respected poll, that 47% of Americans strongly disapprove, not disapprove, but strongly disapprove. There's another group that's lesser disapproval, but disapproving. That is perhaps the largest millstone around an incumbent president I've seen in a long time. What is it that Joe Biden's done to get that level of resistance to him?
Well, the first thing he did was misunderstand the immigration issue, the hottest issue on the campaign trail right now. You know, he was convinced coming in that all you had to do on immigration was undo what Trump had done and everybody would love him. And it hasn't worked out that way. And the Democratic Party overall and the Biden administration in particular have been too slow to notice that. Second thing has been the economy. You know, they keep trying to tell everybody that you're wrong. The economy really is good when people aren't feeling it. You know, that's, again, talking past. And ultimately, I think where a big part of the mistake is that in the Biden administration right now is they seem to think that this really the only issue in this campaign is the character of Donald Trump. So they're not really talking all that much about issues. Donald Trump, he may say things in a crazy way. He may go off the handle, but at least he's talking about issues. Same thing we saw in 2016 with the Hillary Clinton campaign. They thought all you had to do was say Donald Trump and you'd win. It's not the way it works. So the president, I think, has put himself in a very difficult position. And And bluntly, the Democratic Party doesn't really have a better option.
Yeah, no, they are. They're too far down the path now to retool. On the flip side, Donald Trump really has gone back to issues. He's toned down. He's dialed down a little bit. I mean, he always has his nicknames. He throws them out there. But even with Nikki Haley in the recent weeks, he's turned it down a little bit. And he's focused on issues, those little five-minute videos he does, the speeches he gives. I think that when you look at his recovery, if you can call it that, his rebound from where he was with all of these things he's either created for himself or been hit with, there is, it does show that a return to substance sometimes gets rewarded by the American people, don't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that's a really important point. The Biden administration does have some arguments they could make if they would, now I don't know how effective they would be, but if they would talk about issues and begin to connect with people, you know, you can at least begin to make up some ground. You know, there was another poll that just came out recently that was greeted with shock and horror in our capital city, showing that voters are evenly divided as to who they think would be better to protect democracy, you know, Biden or Trump. And the reason it was such a shock was, you know, in this narrative that's been built up in the last couple of years, it sounds a little bit like, you know, politics was pure and then Donald Trump came along and became corrupt and the threat to democracy is January 6th. And some people have talked about that so much that it never occurred to them that taking legal actions to get the former president off the ballot might be seen as a threat to democracy. You know, there's this blind spot, that, and we all do it. We all get caught up in our bubbles, and we don't look what's coming from the other flank. But again, I think that's because the, you know, maybe it's Trump derangement syndrome or whatever else you want to call it, that has prevented the Democrats from really focusing on issues enough to address in this campaign.
Yeah, they feel like they're like in a glass jar and they can't hear what the American public is saying. And it's, you know, that phenomenon happens in politics. Sometimes you get in this echo chamber and you don't realize that what you think you're connecting with the American people is not what they're talking about. They got some other grievance or some other concern. And it just feels like there's a big giant glass jar and the Democrats are speaking. They can't hear what the American people are saying back to them. You've got some other races on your watch list tonight. I think Texas, where you are down in Texas, a little bit of a civil war, the revenge tour of Ken Paxton, sort of the old Bush guard in Texas up against the new MAGA version of Texas. What do you think is going to happen there?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because there's two ways of describing what's happening here. One is the revenge tour, which absolutely it is. I mean, the old guard, you know, impeached Ken Paxton. He's not happy about that. Obviously, he survived. But the other issue that's really significant is school choice. As we see in a lot of states, rural Republicans are not quite sold on this. And there's a lot of reasons for it. And so Governor Abbott is actively campaigning against some people who defeated his school choice program. And what makes it fascinating is sometimes he's going against, you know, he and Paxton and others are working at cross purposes. So I expect that there will be some people defeated on the school choice issue, and that will help pass it here in Texas. Beyond that, it's just going to continue to be a bloody fight as we go forward.
Yeah, it really is. There are just two different wings of the party in Texas, and they view each other very differently. They view the world differently.
Sure, but that happens. You know, it happens in states. If you look at New York or California, the Democratic Party has some of the same things because you're dominant within your state. So that's, you know, that's part of what's going on. But really, I think the story tonight, there will certainly be some, you know, we'll look at the California Senate race.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one.
Yeah. You know, celebrity athletes doing well in a poll, and probably Garvey's going to make it into the finals in California. I don't expect we'll see a Republican senator from there by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, so that's something to keep an eye on, see how that turns out. And maybe, you know, you can make the case that if Garvey does really well, maybe that signals a little bit of buyer's remorse about how far left the Democratic Party has gone in California. But you can actually see that already by some of the pushback we've been seeing in San Francisco and other places.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, George Gascon, too, the district attorney, could also have a difficult race tonight. That would be another just brushback from their own party. Hey, you're going too far. We might come back this way a little bit. And I think that might be another bellwether tonight. After this, the primary calendar gets kind of boring. There'll be a fun, you know, there'll be some fun stuff in Arizona, things like that. But we really settle into a general election mode really early this year. And the dynamics that both parties have, I think Republicans seem to have to figure out how they excel at early voting because they've not done it well. They put some money into it, but they still haven't done it well. We'll see what happens. Democrats have to, I think, find some answers, right? They need an answer to immigration and the economy, that the answers they're giving right now don't work. And then on the flip side, I think Republicans need an answer to abortion. It seems like those four dynamics will kind of sort themselves out as we get to the fall. What are the things you're watching on all four of those fronts?
Well, let's start with the economy. At this point, I don't think the Democrats can talk about it differently. They've got to hope that the economy improves. And when I say the economy improves, I don't mean GDP or inflation slowing down. The political measure of the economy is how people feel about their own personal finances. Are they trending better or worse? Our last polling just a couple weeks ago showed that only 21% of voters say their own personal finances are getting better. 41% say they're getting worse. That's a negative 20, a net negative 20. If that number doesn't improve, there's nothing the Democrats can do on that issue. You know, on the other hand, if you're feeling good about that, and all of a sudden the American people are less pessimistic about the economy come October, November, about their own personal finances, then we could see a different race. But that's the issue there. It's no longer rhetoric. It's what's going to happen. On the immigration issue, I think the Democrats also are a little bit stuck on that. President Biden is going to perhaps try and take some steps to show he's serious about the issue. But every time he tries to move any even hint towards the center on that issue, you know, he gets a lot of pushback from the left wing in his party. So the immigration issue is a struggle. The Democrats had hoped that they could flip the storyline there by saying the Republicans voted against this bill that the president wanted, but that doesn't seem to be working in any way, shape, or form. The Democrats' best issue far and away is the abortion issue. And it's something that Republicans struggle on for a variety of reasons, as you and I have talked about before. One of the reasons is because a lot of Republicans simply don't want to talk about it.
It's not comfortable for them.
Yeah, it's as uncomfortable for a Republican to talk about abortion as it is for a Democrat to talk about immigration. So I think, you know, that's the area that Republicans need to have some answers. I have to talk about it. And bluntly, as you and I have discussed before, they have to start with the reality that there are two lives involved, and Republicans need to acknowledge and show care and concern for the fact that it often involves a woman in a difficult situation. And if you can't begin with that premise, if you can't acknowledge that difficulty and offer to want to help and support that woman in that position, you're not going to get anywhere on this debate. The recent Alabama court ruling didn't help the case at all. You know, on that, the specifics of the IVF issue, only 6% of Americans want it to be made illegal. One of the fascinating things we found, people who you would define as born again Christians, people who've had some kind of a transformational experience, their views aren't any different on the IVF issue than anybody else. But somehow this, you know, exploded onto the scene, and it becomes another chance for the Republicans to be put on the defensive on an issue relating to reproductive rights of some sort. So it's a, you know, that's a challenging issue.
You came up with an incredible platform, though, and I think people who've looked at that, the work that you did last year, realize that that has the most potential for giving Republicans a meaningful way to engage on this. I haven't seen a lot use it yet. I think one of the big experiments that seemed to flame out or fail was in Virginia. It looked like Youngkin tried to double down on a 15-week, and he didn't pick up a whole lot of the independents or the suburban vote, but he lost a lot of his evangelical vote. They stayed home because they didn't like the 15-week. So that one seems like that's been thrown out already. But addressing the woman, the circumstances, that's a winner, right?
It is. You know, Youngkin's plan didn't work all that well, partly because people think that if a Republican is talking about 15 weeks, they think ultimately that person wants to ban abortion entirely. You know, that may not be a fair perception. That may not be what was on Governor Youngkin's heart or anybody else's, but that is the public perception. In fact, in some segments of our society, especially the people who are sort of in the middle on the abortion issue, you know, they think it should be legal, but early, but they really don't like it. They tend to think that Republicans, that pro-life legislators really do want to punish women. So the minute you start talking about any kind of a ban, you've turned them off. On the other hand, if you focus on protecting women, helping women in difficult situations, and by doing so, we want to reduce the number of abortions. Well, that's a winner, because by a 3-to-1 margin, voters want fewer abortions. They just don't want that hate-filled approach, and they certainly don't want to ban it completely.
Right. Yeah, there's other ways to deal with it. And it's a place where whoever gets there first is going to win a lot of support if they can just step into that void and have that conversation. So interesting. Scott, we always enjoy talking to you. We learn so much. We always get a great view of the world. We laugh a little bit. We certainly come out a lot smarter. It is just an honor to have you on the show. It's such an important day. Thanks for making time for us.
All right, John. Talk to you again soon.
Thank you, sir. All right, folks, we're off to a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with Madison Gilbert from the RNC giving us the RNC's perspective right after these messages.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. As we said at the top of the show, it is Super Tuesday, one of the most exciting days in all of politics. Once every 4 years, 15 to 20 states tend to vote and pick their presidential nominees on this day. 15 tonight. We'll have a lot of clarity on both sides of the aisle by the end of the night. President Trump should have a strong night tonight, it looks like, from the polling, but we'll have to watch and see. Joining us right now is Madison Gilbert. She is one of the key spokespeople at the RNC and also one of their key strategists. And she's got great insights into what's going to be happening, not only tonight, but how the next few months play out. Madison, great to have you back on the show.
Good to be with you, John, as always.
Tonight's a big night. I think a lot of people expect President Trump to do well. But I think more importantly, people will see, I think, in the polling turnout today, an enthusiasm on the Republican side that might be lacking on the Democrat side. It seems like there's a lot of energy going into this Super Tuesday for conservatives, Republicans. They see a real opportunity to change this country. They don't like where it's headed right now.
Yeah, I think it's not only Republicans, John, but it's people all across the country that are not happy with the direction of the nation. You look at that polling, you look at those numbers, a very large majority of people, sometimes over 70, 75% say that they think the country's on the wrong track. So I think you're going to see some good enthusiasm in the Republican Party as people turn out in the primary today on Super Tuesday. But I also think you're going to see a huge opportunity with the lack of enthusiasm on the Democratic side as we head towards November to pick up some of those independent and former Democrat votes that, you know, again, they're disenfranchised by the Democratic Party, but they don't know how they're going to vote in November. And I think this is our opportunity to look at these numbers and then start taking a big run at these people between now and November, letting them know that it doesn't have to be this way. It didn't have to be this way. And we can turn things around through a change in leadership.
And that's really one of the things that is noticeable. I've covered a lot of politics in 40 years, and the message on the Democratic side is very negative. It's very dark. It's really basically a suppression effort to suppress the vote. Republicans have this, even though they're very candid about the state of the country, there's an optimism that's more like the Reagan optimism. And the Democrats have this dark, dark, dark language all day long. Negative, dark. That is starting to play. I think people get tired of the dark over time. The positive message seems to be cutting through to Hispanics and African Americans and young people. They're moving in the polls.
That's right. You know, I've always viewed the Republican Party as the party of eternal optimism, the party of common sense solutions. And I think you're starting to see a lot of that resonate with people who it never resonated with before, because as Republicans, I think we're not only now an open doors party, but we're starting to go and talk to people we've never talked to before. And so often I hear from people, you know, I felt forgotten. It's, you know, why so many Democrats, of course, voted for Trump in 2016. You know, a lot of union people voted for Trump here in Ohio in 2016. But I hear people across the country, I feel forgotten. I feel like the party's left me. I've, you know, voted Democrat my whole life for generations. My family's always voted Democrat, but we're fed up. And I think that, again, goes back to that opportunity as Republicans that we have to grow our party, not just in 2024, but hopefully long term, because we don't have to agree 100% of time, but we have to not let perfection be the enemy of good. And if we let perfection be the enemy of good and we force ourselves as Republicans or conservatives to agree with each other 100% of the time, we won't grow our party and we won't win. In order to win, we have to recognize that there are some issues sometimes that we'll have diversity among Republicans on, but that's okay. But there are a lot of main issues and key issues right now, especially when it comes to the economy and it comes to the border, that we can all largely agree on. We have different ideas, maybe sometimes a little bit on how to get there to solve them, but we all want to see prices come down. We all want to see a good economy again, like we had in 2019. We want to see the border secured. We don't want to see fentanyl coming into our communities. So there's a lot of things we can agree on, and I think we can use these things to grow the party.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And you're seeing it in the registration numbers in some of the states. You see what's happened in North Carolina the last few years of Republicans growing so quickly in that state. There seems to be some mojo and some widening of the tent and more people coming in. There's a number in the polling this week. And obviously, the New York Times is a poll that tends to lean a little bit to the left, but it, you know, it's a pretty well-respected poll, New York Times, Siena. And obviously, President Trump's up 5 in a theoretical head-to-head. But perhaps the most stark number of all, and I've been doing politics, like I said, for about 40 years, haven't seen it really since the 1980 election. 47% of the people in the New York Times poll said they strongly disapprove of President Biden's performance. And normally 47 is a combination of somewhat and strong 47%. There's another 10 or 20% that are somewhat dissatisfied. That is perhaps one of the largest millstones I've seen around an incumbent president's neck in the polling in a long time. Why do you think Americans have become so dissatisfied with President Biden so quickly?
Well, I think half of them believe the guy's half dead. But on top of that, you look at every single one of the issues. And I think, you know, you've been even in the game longer than I have, John. And you look in the past, and so often you have presidents, and when you look at their disapproval, it's usually on one or two key issues, right? People really don't like, you know, how this person handled this war or how this person handled the economy. But when it comes to Joe Biden, it comes to the past 3 years, it's every single issue. People don't trust him on the economy. They don't trust him on immigration. They don't trust him on foreign policy. You know, you look back to the Trump administration, they said, this guy's going to start World War III. He's crazy. We saw more peace during the Trump administration than we have seen in quite some time in the world. Biden comes in almost immediately. Everything starts erupting. Complete chaos, not just across the world, but in our own country as well. 9 million people have now crossed since Biden took office. An absolutely exorbitant number. We don't know who these people are. They're not being vetted. And the guy spent 443 days on vacation. You really can't make it up. It's almost a joke when you really look at some of the numbers. The cost of everything is up. Credit card debt at an all-time high. Food up 34%. Shelter up 19%. Energy up 33%. But people's wages are down. Their savings are down. This is not a sustainable way for Americans to live, and they're completely killing the American middle class as a result, and they don't seem to care. It's the whole administration. It's very disappointing.
It's funny, in going to the grocery store recently or the gas station, I've heard a term I haven't heard in the past. I've only heard it with liberal Democrats who had it as a theory, but grocery cart poverty and energy poverty. People can't afford their utility bills because of these new renewable mandates. And obviously food is going up in a big way. The grocery cart just so much more expensive. The restaurant so much more expensive. I was at a restaurant on Sunday night, and the gentleman said, I used to go out every Sunday with my family. Now it's once every 3 weeks because that's all we can afford. That sense that our wallet doesn't buy nearly as much as it did at the end of the Trump presidency, that seems to really have sunk in on people. No matter how many times Joe Biden says Bidenomics, people look at their bills like it ain't better.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, anybody who's gone to the grocery store lately, you look at your cart and you're getting a fourth of what you used to get sometimes. It's absolutely insane. You go to the gas pump, it's still higher. They say, oh, the gas prices are coming down. They're still higher than what they were. And again, when people are making less, they have less in their savings. They have more credit card debt. You look back even to the holidays. So many families across this country just didn't give gifts at all this year. I mean, this is not something people were talking about being forced to do back in 2018, 2019. Obviously, COVID changed things a little bit, but then you saw the big influx of free money coming in to so many places. So now that that's all worn off, we're really, I think, seeing the reality of many of these Biden policies and the overspending in Washington. Something, as you know, I've been talking about for over a decade, you've been talking about for a long time. We can't possibly have over $34 trillion of national debt, have our deficit be out of control every year, and think that things are going to get better. So we have to start reeling in that spending. And I remember writing, you know, for you at the Washington Times years ago, in my Millennial Mindset column, talking about the fact, this was like 2015, talking about the fact at the time that the national debt was going to surpass, I believe it was like $13 trillion, and how this was something we couldn't come back from. We have to take a serious look at what we're going to do to go the other direction. Now, not even 10 years later, look at where we're at.
It's crazy. Yeah, I don't think anyone could imagine the national debt we've hung around future generations of this country. Let's talk Turkey a little bit about just the numbers tonight. So 15 states, President Trump has about 240 delegates. Nikki Haley has about a fifth of that, maybe a sixth of that. Tonight at the end, how close could President Trump, if he had a good night, how close could he potentially come to wrapping up the nomination?
Well, it's likely that he'll be very close. There's 854 delegates up for grabs, as you mentioned earlier, in 15 states across the country. To clinch the nomination, a candidate soon to be nominated would need 1,215 delegates. There's 2,429 total. So after tonight, if the president has a very good night, he would be fairly close. Estimates have him now between 240, 270. Some states are winner take all. So he may not obviously cross the threshold, but he would be very close.
Yeah, he'd be in pretty good shape. It'd be inevitable. I think, well, people will look at tonight and say it's inevitable now. Let's see. So the next question is, how do you unify the party? It's not clear what Nikki Haley will do right now. I think President Trump has kind of backed off the attack center and just given her the runway to maybe get out tonight or soon. Unifying the party, very important. Part of that is a transition that's going on at the RNC now. Ronald McDaniel going to be stepping down. Tell us what the transition looks like over the next few weeks. What should we all be watching for?
We think when we talk about party unity, it's a lot bigger than President Trump. It's not just about 2024. It's about moving forward as Republicans. What type of party do we want to see? We've seen the Democrats time and time again. They fight behind closed doors. They don't agree on everything, but they come out. They come out united and they get it done. They push their candidates across the finish line and they get the job done. As Republicans, we have to do this better than ever before or we will continue to lose. I understand so many people say, you know, we want to lose on principle, but if we're losing, no matter what it is, we're still losing and we're not able to help people. We're not able to change policy. We're not able to turn the country around. So I don't care whether you love President Trump or you hate President Trump, whether you love a specific candidate or you hate a specific candidate. The reality is they likely, very, very likely, have way more in common with what you want to see accomplished in this country than any Democrat today. The Democratic Party has gone so far left, it's unrecognizable. You look back even to 2015, 2016, the Bernie Sanders type policies that everybody said were radical, including Democrats at the time, have now become moderate in some cases, which is absolutely insane.
Who would have thought that, right? In just 8 years.
I mean, who would have ever thought that this, you know, just 8 years later, but many of us warned this is a slippery slope. This is a slippery slope, but no one wanted to listen. And now again, that's why Democrats are so shocked in so many places across the country where they're not hardcore liberal. They were just, you know, your good old Democrats that had been Democrats for, many years in their families, hardworking Americans. There's no home in the Democratic Party for them anymore. So I think as Republicans, we have to unite. We have to get our candidates across the finish line so we can accomplish things. Again, we don't have to agree on 100% of things, but we have to agree on the fact that things are definitely going the wrong way under Democratic leadership or lack of leadership in this case. And you look at states or you look at cities across the country that have Democrat leaders as well, and you're seeing very similar results, complete and total failure, crime crisis, bad economy, everything. And we need to turn that around. So we have to unite. If people don't unite in the Republican Party, we will lose. That's the reality. And people need to start to open their eyes to that.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. You see in today's announcement of Kyrsten Sinema stepping down and not even going to run for re-election, moderates like her, there is no home. Joe Manchin earlier this year made the similar decision. The centrist Democrats are homeless in the Democratic Party. Now the question is, do they begin to make transitions like we've seen with Tulsi Gabbard and others? We're like, hey, the other side is opening me and welcoming me, and we don't have to agree on everything, but we can agree on fixing a lot of things that are bipartisan. And that dynamic, I think Kyrsten Sinema today really shook up a lot of the moderate Democrats, realizing, well, if she can't make it, who else cannot make it in this world? And I think that's a big moment. What will the transition look like? When will we know that we have a new chairwoman or chairman for the Republican National Committee?
So we have an election coming up at the end of this week in Houston. So that'll be kind of the end of that process. So we will have a new chairwoman or chairman at that point. We'll have a new vice chair as well. And then any other transition will happen following that. But, you know, you mentioned Democrats coming over the Republican Party, and there's so many others besides Tulsi that I don't think get talked about enough. Eric Johnson, mayor of Dallas, came over to the Republican Party. He cites, you know, his Christian faith as one of the reasons, you know, that he switched his party affiliation. He talked a lot. I heard him talk when I was in Dallas. He talked a lot about crime in the city and a lot of Democrats backing that defund the police movement, which was not something that Democrats across the country necessarily agreed with, but they felt, again, that the party wasn't listening to them. So I think that's another good example people forget about on that point.
Yeah, that is a good example, a good reminder of how that is. And the dynamic is very real. You see it all across the country. As we pivot to the general election, which will happen really quick, I think a lot of people are wondering, all right, Democrats have done a good job the last 6 or 8 years getting out early vote, getting out what I call couch potato or low propensity voters. Do Republicans have an answer for it this time? What's your feeling on how early voting and winning that game is so that you're not starting election day so far behind in the ballot count? I know there's a lot of effort put into it. Do you feel good about where we're going to be in November?
We have to break the stigma in the Republican Party. I'm out here talking about this all the time. I don't love early voting. I didn't want it to be this way. I want the prospective states to change it. It's not going to happen before November. That's the reality. So for every Republican like me that isn't a big fan, I still encourage you to visit bankyourvote.com, see how and when you can vote early in your state, and then make sure you get out there and do it and get as many people as you can around you that are voting Republican to do it. Because we might spend $5, John, chasing a Republican who votes early versus over 30 chasing them up until election day. So if you know you're voting Republican, let us use that other $25 plus differential to chase those independents, to chase those Democrats. It's a money game. If we want to win, we have to have the financial resources to chase these people. And the reality is, it's not unlimited. So we can't do it all. We have to save some of that money to be able to do it.
And there are real life examples that when Republicans do it, they succeed. Ron Johnson won Wisconsin, outperformed the other candidates on the top of the ticket because he did some early voting. The New York races in 2022, the four House seats were really moved by early voting there. When it is utilized, it works. And I think 2024 will be the year. Just looking at reporting, I think it's the year where Republicans even up quite a bit with the Democrats on the early vote. It's going to be an interesting dynamic to watch. Madison, I've always enjoyed working with you and learning from you. You do such great work. You're a brilliant writer and obviously a brilliant communicator. Great to have you on the show today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking to you soon.
Folks, don't go anywhere. When we come back, the great story of how Muzzlestick was founded. This great product that creates gun safety, Second Amendment safety, chamber or barrel flag. A great story. It started with a twig in the backyard of a home. We're going to have that right after these messages.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you.
Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, folks, welcome back for the commercial break. I'm always excited to talk about the product Muzzle Stick because it is a simple but brilliant innovation that can save lives. I'm a big Second Amendment fan. My whole family has had responsible gun ownership for really decades and decades. Muzzle Stick has made gun ownership and gun safety a little bit better, a little bit smarter, particularly for someone who might encounter a gun and isn't as familiar as the owner. And that is such a brilliant idea. And so we've talked several times with Leah on the show. You know that. But today I am blessed to introduce to you for the first time the owner of Muzzle Stick, Joe Rumpke. Joe, great to have you on the show.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
I just love this story because you guys are in the waste business and the recycling business. And just give us that moment when you realized you could do something with recycled plastics that would be as brilliant as Muzzle Stick.
Well, you know, John, it started off, I'm a big hunter. I muzzleload hunt in my backyard and I use the cap and ball and stuff. I come in after hunting, I'm going back out. I'm not going to take the charge out of it. And I've got a son that will come over and grab my gun and go out. And I've got a younger son also. So I took the cap out, put it, I've got an old school cabinet with a glass, which my son gave it to me, so I'll never get rid of it. And
that's awesome.
I put it in there. I made a little sign, just a stick in the barrel, so he'd know there was still the charge in there, loaded. Just a stick with a piece of wood on it. I wrote loaded on it, okay? With that, my son, that's 19 now, it was like 10, and he came by and he said, Dad, come upstairs. He said, Dad, is that gun really loaded? And I says, yep. And I tell you, I looked at my wife and it was like an aha moment. It's like,
exactly.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
It worked, you know. And with that, we got to talking about it, and I talked to my oldest son, and he said, man, Dad, he said, maybe you ought to look into getting a patent on that. So I said, well, what's it going to hurt? So I talked to a lawyer about it, and he told me, he says, you know, that's got to be, somebody's had a thought about it, and no one did. And so, yeah, so we started off with a loaded, and we started going to, like, these gun shows around town, and people liked it, and we got different ideas, and they said, well, maybe you got to have something that goes in the chamber. So then we came up with a chamber flag, and we've been just kind of progressively improving and changing designs. And I listen to the customers, and if they have something they want, I'll make it. You know, it's just, it's a passion of mine, basically. I'm not making any money off of it. A lot of people think I'm going it, and I'm not. I'm not. And it's a side job, and it just gets me out to people to preach to them because I think it is a great, great product. Less than a cup of coffee, and it tells everybody what the heck's going on with your gun.
It is a no-brainer, and it is so brilliant. And I didn't realize the first Muzzle Stick literally was a stick, huh? I hadn't heard that before.
Yes, it was. And my wife came up with that idea. She said, Walter, we'll just call it a Muzzle Stick.
I love it. And with the origins of the story, it's completely authentic. It's great. There is so much people are beginning to learn about gun safety. And I think there's a whole new generation of Americans that are falling in love with the shooting sports and hunting, or just realize in this uncertain times of safety, having a weapon at home for your own personal security is a great idea. The NRA for a long time was, you know, the gold standard for gun safety and gun training. I got one of my gun courses here when I was a younger guy. But it's important that even with all of the controversies and things going on now, that mindset of gun safety doesn't lose a moment of attention, right? It's how do we do that? It's been a lot of negative publicity the last few weeks, but what's the best way to keep gun safety on the front minds of people? Make sure everyone who's a responsible gun owner has gone through a responsible gun safety case training.
Well, John, over 50% of the people, I don't have the exact number, that own a gun, have a loaded gun in the house, that is not in a safe because they buy it, frankly, for home security. And so I've talked to many people at these different shows where everyone knows my gun's loaded. It's fine. What about that one person that comes in and doesn't know? I talked to a guy today, and I'll leave his name out. He contacted me. He's pushing for gun safety. His 26-year-old son had an apartment, had a gun in the console on a couch inside, I guess, an entertainment center. And it was loaded. He had some friends over, and a friend of his was drinking, picked it up. Hey, look at this. Wow. And shot and killed his son.
Oh, no.
This guy, yeah. And the kid had no idea anything, knew nothing about guns. And, you know, just a little flag in it saying it's loaded or unloaded for less than a cup of coffee. Come on, really, people. I mean, it's a no-brainer. And then I had a guy at the outdoor show in Harrisburg tell me, he was an ex-Marine, and he knew everything about guns, and everybody knows my guns are loaded and all this. And I said, okay, do you have kids? He said, yeah, I got a 16-year-old boy. I said, okay, let's put you in this scenario. You're outside doing whatever you're doing. Your son knows he's not supposed to be getting in that drawer because you told him to, right? And he said, yeah. I said, well, he's got a friend over. Kids being kids. Hey, come here. I want to show you something. He went up. He'd go up, show his son, and I had a .45 that was had the firing pin pulled out at the show, and I cocked it. I said, so, your son is showing his friend this gun. He knows how to check it. So he pulls the chamber back to see if there's one in the chamber, right? He said, yeah. I said, well, now there's one in the chamber, and that gun's cocked. Are you going to have enough confidence in your son to uncock that with his friend standing there? I said, so that's how the accidents happen. I said, you know, it's you've ruined several lives because you didn't want to take the extra step for safety.
Yeah, and it's not an expensive step. That's the most amazing thing about this, like you said.
That's it. And if it was flagged, you'd see it. Somebody opens a drawer, they see a gun down there. They don't know whether it's loaded. A little piece of plastic, when loaded or unloaded, goes a long, long, long way.
It sure does.
If it saves one life, that's all that matters.
Yes, that's it. It really does. It's worth everything just to save one life. And you seized on something that I grew up in a law enforcement family, and over the years we saw lots of tragedies. Almost every time an accidental firearm, a tragedy occurred, it involves someone who is not familiar with the gun. That's the person you're protecting. It isn't the people who are familiar. They know how to do it, but it's that moment and you don't think about it until the tragedy struck. This is where I think you found the perfect solution because it really does address that unfamiliar user encountering a gun. When you were developing this, was that in the back of your mind? Did you kind of have a statistical sense of who the most likely victim would be?
You hear it all the time on the news, these kids picking up guns and shooting them. We just had one last week in my hometown around Hamilton, Ohio. Some 16-year-old boy was in his bedroom with a gun and shot his friend in the head. Luckily, it wasn't a critical. It just kind of grazed the side of his head. But now the dad is in trouble for having loaded firearms in the house and not being secured. And, you know, it's just, it could have been so much worse and it could have been prevented.
That's it.
It's an everyday occurrence. You know, it's terrible. And I think the big thing we need to do, okay, gun safety is huge. Okay, they practice the gun locks and all that. But reality, if you've got someone breaking in your house, you're going to say, hold on a second, let me go find the key for that lock so I can get it unlocked. You know, or you get into your safe in my house. I've got a gun safe next to the bed. You hit it with your fingers and it opens up. My gun's always loaded. My wife's 50-50. You know, sometimes she'll unload it and put it in there. We put a flag in it. Now, in the middle of the night, somebody breaks into your house. You'll be able to tell which gun is loaded or unloaded by just touching it.
That's a great point.
And it's, you know, it's seconds save lives, and it's just, I mean, I can't, okay, I made the product. I'm not making money on it, believe me, God. And it's a passion of mine right now. I'm retired, and it's just, I love it because I get to meet and talk to a lot of people with a lot of problems. I've talked to people with muzzle loaders that shot holes in the foot, shot fingers off, shot through the walls, shot through cars. In fact, we talked to one guy that was out in Colorado with his son, elk hunting with muzzle loaders. The boy put his muzzle loader in his sleeping bag to keep it warm and dry. Hold it out the next day. He didn't take the primer out of it. Hold it out the next day. That hammer went back and blew a big hole right through his chest. I could go on and on. The stories we heard at these shows, it's just, it's frightening. I didn't realize it was as bad as what it is, you know, but it's a simple solution.
It is. It is. And as you said, if it saved one life, it's already served its purpose. And there are thousands of lives that can be saved this way. It's such a great product. Now, you talked about the power of the narrative, and I know you're taking some time to gather other stories and experiences from people. So where a chamber flat could have or did save a life. If people have a story like that so they can contribute this so the public continues to learn, what's the best way for them to get that to you, Joe?
They could email me at joerumke@muzzlesticks.com or just get on our website and we'll get back with you. That's the man I spoke with today. He goes out, he said, once a month and preaches about gun safety. He's down in Orlando, Florida. I'm sending him product to hand out at his things. And I told him if you've got a big show or a big gathering or something, I don't have a problem coming down and talking.
How cool is that?
You know, it's just the right thing to do. You know, God put you on this earth for a reason, and I think I found it, you know?
You have made your country better. And I, you know, one of the great things as a journalist, I get to meet so many amazing people over the course of history. And Joe, you fit that quintessential great American who saw a problem, used their innovative business skills and concepts, and even some of your recycled product, and you actually created a solution where a lot of people would have just created fear, right? I mean, one of the things that goes on right now is there's so much demagoguery and fear mongering that goes on with guns, and yet guns can be handled so safely every day. You stepped into the void, and it is a remarkable thing to see as a journalist and to chronicle as a journalist. You've made our country safer, better, and you did it in the smartest of ways. I'm really grateful for that.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. You know, God help us if they try to take the gun away from us.
Nah, that's not happening.
Our hands will be tied.
Yep.
It won't. But, you know, that's the thing. They talk about all the negative and how they should outlaw all these different types of guns, and that's not the answer.
It's not.
Let's teach people and tell them the safe way of doing things.
No, I think that's exactly right.
I mean, and I'm on board for that, you know? I mean, I'm not a paid spokesman or anything like that. It's just, I do it because it's the right thing.
Well, we are grateful for what you've done and also for the time you spend with us. You and Leah have done such a great job of educating people on the statistics, the solutions. It is a great honor as someone who champions the Second Amendment and is a proud gun owner. Safety always comes first. My dad was a cop, and from the moment I was old enough to open my eyes, he taught me about gun safety, and I am forever grateful for that. And you are extending that legacy in your family and across this country. So we're so grateful, Joe.
I appreciate that, John. I really do. Anything I can do to help, I'm there. You know, it's just the right thing.
Well, you are. Your goodness is what makes this country so great. It's people like you that keep America great. Joe, great honor, folks. If you want to go get one of those muzzle sticks that you're moved, you don't want to see one more number added to those casualty statistics, go to muzzlestick.com. It's so simple. MUZLSTIK.com. And remember, now I just found out today for the first time, it really started with a twig, a stick. How about that? Go there today. Go get your flags. They are brilliant. Barrel and chamber flags will keep your family and your friends safe. Joe, thank you so much, my friend. Great. What a great honor to meet you in person for the first time.
Thank you, John. I'm so happy to talk to you. And it was an honor to talk to you and meet you. So it's amazing. Anytime you need me, call me.
I will take you up on that. Thank you so much. God bless you, sir.
Thank you, John.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. Hey, I want to shout out two important partners. The first is Alliance Defending Freedom. I told you I'd like to raise $5,000 for their efforts. They're in major Supreme Court cases around the country. All you got to do is go to adf.org/John. adf.org/John. They got two very important Supreme Court cases, more coming down the pike. They do more to protect free speech on college campuses, to protect religious freedom, to protect the right to exercise your conscience in this great country. Alliance Defending Freedom. Go to adf.org/John. Give them a boost today. Anything you donate will go to all the great legal fights that they're fighting to preserve American liberties in this very turbulent time in our country's history. Another one that I also always want to shout out. You know, I think the world of them. I've been talking about them forever and a day, and I'll never stop talking about them. They're just such good people. Hillsdale College. They are doing education the right way. And one of the things that they've done is created these incredible online courses that people like you and I can take for free. We get a free education. And my good friend, Victor Davis Hanson's got one right now. It's called American Citizenship and Its Decline. And Victor Davis Hanson, one of the great historians, one of the great writers, great podcaster on Just the News. It's an 8-lecture course. And when you're done, you're going to have the history of the citizenship in the West, the threats it's facing today, things like the erosion of the middle class, the disappearance of our borders, the growth of an unaccountable administrative state and government, the rise of globalist organizations. It is the ultimate historical look at where we stand on America in an American citizenship at this great, incredible crossroads in American history. And what better person to hear it from than Victor Davis Hanson? Now go right now to hillsdale.edu/justnews. hillsdale.edu/justnews. Sign up, get a free course. You can't learn from anyone better than Hillsdale College and my good friend, Victor Davis Hanson. One more time, hillsdale.edu/justnews. All right, that wraps it up. We'll have all the election results tomorrow. Until then, God bless you. Have a great evening. At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.